Americans, a special collection of the Penn State University Libraries. Peter's worked for Fred Waring for over 30 years as a recording and sound engineer and producer. And when Waring died in 1984, he gave all of his library and memorabilia to Penn State. Peter went with it as the archivist. It's not clear here whether he was actually part of the estate that went with it or not, but maybe you can tell us there. But this is Fred Waring.
Thank you, Jerry. Jim, I always say when Fred gave his antiques to Penn State, I was in them. And distressing as it may seem, there really was an accordion in it. My timing is bad. I should do a session on his last 10 years when he finally had to give up the full orchestras, and in order to keep the sound that he was used to hearing with orchestras, he substituted, which is worse than an accordion, a cordovox, which is an electronicified accordion. But anyway, that's a different story. For those people that may not know exactly who Fred Waring was, which there are those people, I want to do a quick overview, at least bring you up to the point where I'm going to talk about the radio broadcasts. Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians started with four kids from Tyrone, a little town in central Pennsylvania, got together and formed a band. They played local dances, and when two of them went to Penn State, they started playing some of the fraternity hops and dances, and became pretty popular throughout the area. It got to a point where Fred and his buddy Freddie Buck, the other banjo, had to make a decision whether they're going to finish school or go into the band business, and I guess wisely they decided to go into the band business. The Waring group expanded to a larger group, and because of their youth, and many of them came out of colleges, they capitalized on the collegiate atmosphere of the group, and because of that, they were picked to be the tour around the country with Harold Lloyd's movie called The Freshman, to play what they called the prologue, which was the live stage show prior to each showing of the movie. They then became one of the top-ranked attractions in the vaudeville circuit in 1928, and went down to went to Paris, France, where they were billed as the Collegiate Orchestra Incomparable. Sometimes they were called the Jazz Orchestra Incomparable. It was a very fast-paced, lively, exciting presentation that they did. In 1927, they were in New York appearing in a Broadway show called Hello Yourself. And in between shows, that's the recording orchestra. Skip the next one. There we go. They went across the river to Brooklyn, New York, and filmed one of the first talking movies that were ever made called Syncopation. While they were the top billing of the show, in looking at the movie, it's interesting they have less camera time than anybody else in the movie. But I think it was obvious at that time in 1928, when the movie came out, that Waring name was bigger than the Bennett name or Morton Downey Sr. and some of those people. They were the big name people. Then in 1933, they went on to the recording industry. They recorded with Victor down in Camden and had a number of top-ranked, best-selling records: Collegiate, Where Do You Work, John. There are known theme songs, Sleep, just to name a few. Radio was coming along, and can you back up one? See what there? There you go. No, that was Syncopation. There you go, radio. Okay. Radio came along, and in 1933, a lot of people said to Mr. Waring he should go into the radio broadcast, and a lot of sponsors did not necessarily agree because they felt the Waring presentation was visual on stages, and they could not adapt that to radio. After 33 auditions, the group was finally bought, so to speak, by the Old Gold cigarette people, and in February 8th, 1933, the American people who had radios listening heard this. They didn't turn their radios on, they probably did.
It's to warm up, man.
Right. Weren't we brainwashed in those days? That announcer, those of you who remember those days, was the mellow cello voice of David Ross. And here's a picture of Fred and David Ross, taken a few years later when Fred was on NBC. The Old Gold show started on CBS. Typical of all the morning shows of those days was every program started with a college medley. I couldn't find Wisconsin, but I came up with Minnesota.
In one of their distinctive college veterans.
A song from Minnesota University, Minnesota Fight Song.
Notice the advertisement, not a cough in the carload. Two gentlemen that were big in that era, one went on, still is around, made their radio debuts on the February show, Harry Richman and Milton Berle. Here's a little bit of Harry Richman singing a song from a current show of 1933.
Now introduces for the first time Goodbye Love from the forthcoming picture of the same name.
Thank you. So this morning, the professor said, Milton, I didn't know you saw it, I did the present I know score, which actually this last night until I reached down and kicked in the face. He thought I was a girl.
I don't think the joke's got any better either. One of the highlights that we found in the Warren broadcast was one night when George Gershwin appeared on the program. Warren always had a wonderful relationship with the songwriters, probably because he played all their songs, all the new ones, the good ones, and the bad ones. But he had a wonderful relationship with George Gershwin, Jerome Kern, Cole Porter, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and Rodgers and Hart. And this is the opening of the program that Gershwin appeared on the show. Gershwin went on to play two of his preludes in the program, one accompanied by the Waring Glee Club. Then they did this version of Rhapsody in Blue like nobody had heard up to that point.
Thank you.
I didn't finish it out. It goes pretty straight from there on. It's not recorded what Mr. Gerstmann thought about that rendition, although he was there and he played it, but it's also interesting to note in the logs it was never done again. So that, of course, was from a Ford broadcast in 1933 after the old gold contract ran out, the Waring Group went on the air for Ford Motor Company. They enjoyed a 3.5-year association with them. Again, it was a half an hour twice a week on the CBS network, and a lot of innovations happened on the Waring broadcast of that era. First of all, he introduced what is probably the forerunner, the first pop vocal swing ensemble, the forerunner of all that have come. It was a group of 7 guys and 1 girl, and he called them the V8.
Come in, this man was asleep. Welcome you to the shortest half hour in radio. The Ford and Lakeland Dealers program, Red Waring and the Central Maine. October, as you know, has always been the month to prepare for winter. And this year, Ford dealers throughout the nation are helping you with your transportation problems. They are offering 150,000 used car bargains, from which you may select the best car you want to need. Many of these cars and trucks are back to the Ford R and GM, renewed and guaranteed, which means they've passed rigid Ford Motor Company specifications, backed by a written money-back guarantee. Be sure to see your Ford dealer during October for better used car value.
Car, it's way off net. The V8, 1 girl, 7 boys, 6, 6, 6.
Interesting story about that group. They were on the show for a year, and then when the Ford contract ended, they went their separate way too. They originally were two out-of-work quartets that were renting rehearsal space in the Irving Berlin studios, and they were sort of across the hall from each other, and in their rehearsing they would tend to try to out-sing each other, and a gentleman at the studios went to them and said, instead of trying to sing, compete with each other across the hall, I think I know a gentleman who might want to use you on his radio program, and he took him to Fred Waring, who immediately heard them and liked them and put them on the air as the V8. The way they're standing there, it works out that you can see who the two quartets are. Some of you who have a past history of pop music may have recognized a few. In the background is Bill Conway, Hal Dickinson, Ralph Brewster, and Chuck Goldstein, who later became the Modern Airs. In the front row is Al Rinker of the Rhythm Boys, B. Wayne, Ken Lane, who became Dean Martin's accompanist, and Johnny Smedling, who were then called and later called B and the Bachelors. And I had, the music library has all the band charts for all the songs they sang and no vocal charts. And a few years ago, I had the privilege, I was able to get in touch with B. Wayne, who still's around, talked to her not more than a month ago, and find out who ran off all the choral charts. And she said, well, there weren't any choral charts. They were all head arrangements. We put all our arrangements together. Bill Conway did a lot of the work for the group, put their arrangements together and sat around the piano, worked them out, and that's how they did their songs, no written music. Another group that made their debut in the Waring Show was also, as far as I know, the first women's choir ever go on radio was Kate Thompson and her choir. Kate Thompson was a singer in her own right and a piano player. She also did the arrangements. Records.
Thank you.
Instead of from the point of research, if anybody happens to know who the names of all those young ladies are, we were trying to find out. We know their first names because we have the music that had their names written on it. Two of them were Kay Thompson's sisters, but if anybody knows who the girls were that comprised your choir, we're researching it. Another unique thing about the radio broadcast is that two young ladies, Rosemary and Priscilla Lane, who later went on to movie fame, this was a period of time when Fred was not making commercial recordings, and therefore there are no commercial recordings of Rosemary and Priscilla Lane. So the only thing we have are the innumerable appearances that they made on the radio program. This is Rosemary and a brand new Cole Porter tune. This is Priscilla Lane and Johnny Scat Davis, who was a trumpeter and scat singer with the Wearing Band.
and they introduced Johnny and Polly. Wow.
Johnny Scott Davis appeared with the Wearing Band for about 5 or 6 years. Again, never made any recordings until later he went to Hollywood and then had his own band in the early 40s. But here's a little bit of Johnny singing a big hit tune of the era, 1936, Mama Don't Allow. This brings us to the subject of corn on the Fred Barron Show. A few years ago, I had an inquiry from an author who was writing a biography on Spike Jones, who was more known as the King of Corn. And he was asking me if I had any material, any correspondence, because he claimed that, or Spike Jones claimed he did a lot of writing to Fred Waring. And he was inspired to do what he did, Spike Jones that is, because of the King of Corn, Fred Waring. And I sort of shook my head and I thought, Geez, I never heard anybody referring to him as the King of Corn. I couldn't figure out where that came from, but then I thought, well, they did some records and for Victor called Never Has Seen a Straight Banana and Any Ice Today, Lady, and Ice Cream, You Scream. Maybe that's what he was referring to. But it wasn't until I got into these radio programs that I realized where Spike Jones got his idea that Fred was the King of Corn, because they did lots of corn. Fred's premise, even to the end, was any program that's going to have music for everybody has to contain some corn. And they were corny. Here's an example of that, a piece called I Don't Want to Go to Bed. And there are other great classics, like Since Nellie Came Home from the City, Annie Doesn't Live Here Anymore, coupled with She Lives in the Navy Yard, What Do the Animals Do, Cross-Eyed Kelly from Pennsylvania, and I Like Bananas Because They Have No Bones. Wonderful music. And what made it worse is they often repeated them three or four times a month with new variations or new, better or for worse, verses. Anyway, the Ford program came to the end in 1936-37, and Fred did a couple of special radio shows. They went out to California to do a movie called Varsity Show. It was filmed on the campus of Pomona College, and one night while there was a break in the shooting, Fred noticed that there was a concert by the Pomona College Glee Club, so he decided to go, being interested in glee clubs and all that. The director of the Glee Club had become ill just prior to the concert, so the assistant director conducted the whole concert. And Fred was very impressed by this young man and asked him to come to New York and help him audition and train a professionally trained Glee Club. Up to this point, all the instrumentalists did all the singing, but Fred realized if he was going to get any more good choral singing, he had to get a professional Glee Club. So he invited this young man by the name of Robert Shaw to come to New York, and this was just prior to when the Roaring Group was ready to go on the Chesterfield Show, starting an era which some choral people today call the Golden Age of Choral Music, because for the next several years, every day on radio and television, and after 49, the American public was treated to what many think the choral music, and they learned to realize the fact that choral music is an art. There were other people that that came with the Waring group that time, but we're going to listen to a little bit of example of one of the Waring production numbers, again going to Gershwin. This is Summertime.
In a dramatic interpretation of Gershwin's Summertime, with Fern, the Les Paul trio, Jimmy Atkins, and Dave Wilson as solo.
Thank you.
The guitar player, if you didn't recognize it before, is the Les Paul Trio. They were the group that they made their debut on the Fred Waring Show. You let it roll? Yeah, let it go. I'll talk over it. The interesting story, Les Paul, Jimmy Atkins, and Ernie Newton came from the Midwest to New York. Les had convinced his cohorts that they could get an audition with Paul Whiteman. Of course, no such thing was the case, but Les was never one to let those little formalities get in the way. He tried to get into Whiteman's office, and it didn't work. So they were standing out in the lobby waiting for the elevator, and out of the men's room came Fred Waring. Fred Waring's office was in the same building. And Les Paul recognized who they were, and they said, "You're Fred Waring." He says, "Yeah." He said, "I think you need to hear us." And they started playing, and of course they could see the elevator coming up to the numbers, and the faster the elevator got close to the floor, the faster they played. And by the time the elevator got there, Fred said, "Okay, get in, let's go up to our rehearsal hall and we'll sing." So they went up, and Fred stopped the rehearsal and said, "I want you to hear these guys. If you like them as much as I think I did, they're on." And so they auditioned for all of the Pennsylvanians, and they were on the radio show for, I guess, 3.5 years. And then Les and Ernie Newton left for, picked up another lead guitar player and became the Les Paul Trio, which we all know, what, as they say, the rest was history. Jimmy Atkins stayed with the Waring organization for several more years as the lead vocalist. Here's a little bit of what they used to do. Keep it down, Andy. And would you believe he still plays Monday nights in New York City? A living legend, if there ever was one. Well, I think I'm kind of running out of time. The radio programs continued up to 1949, when Fred went into television. He introduced a lot of classics. The "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," "Dry Bones," that were gold record sellers for him, the Nutcracker Suite, "Into Still the Night," all the great Waring classics came out of the radio days, and then in 1949 he went on television, but then that's another story. I was going to close, I think I have run out of time, don't you, Jim? I don't know where we are in the record, are you? We don't have a fast forward on this, so I can't. I'll just tell you the story, and if we catch up with it or not, I was going to close with the Battle Hymn of the Republic, which was another gold record that Waring had. There's a story behind it. There was a play in New York with Helen Hayes and Cornelius Oder Skinner that featured this old hymn, and they, being good friends with Fred, decided this was a good song for his radio program, and they brought a copy of the hymn to his office and said, "I think this is going to make a wonderful presentation on the Waring podcast." And it's an old hymn that kind of fell into disuse and maybe needs to be revived. And he sort of agreed with him, but he didn't do anything with it. And a week later, he got a package from his ace arranger, Roy Ringwald from California, who had been researching hymns for a proposed record album that Waring was going to do at Decca. And he came across this hymn and did an arrangement and sent it to Fred, coincidentally, with Helen Hayes and Cornelius Oder Skinner. And so, in October 1945, the debut of Battle Hymn of the Republic was on the radio broadcast, and it was, became an instant classic, a gold record winner. The sheet music, Fred has a gold printing plate of Battle Hymn of the Republic because the sheet music sold 1 million copies and now has passed selling 2 million copies. So, talk about reviving something that was really a revival. Where are we? We're in silence.
Or Helen Hayes, if you'd like to present that great hymn of freedom which Helen and her troops sang at the finale of the play Harriet, the Battle of the Republic. The Glee Club, the orchestra, Gordon Berger, and our entire audience.
From a radio broadcast, and we will be putting out an archival series of CDs with some of the highlights from all these radio broadcasts, and they will be cedarized. These work. Thank you very much.
Great, thanks, Peter. In your program, you will note that it says that the coffee break is in the captain's table. Well, we're the only ones that know that, apparently, because they brought the food in and the sodas and stuff, and it's back there. So the food and goodies are in here. However, I would encourage you to go ahead and go over to the captain's table, about which I think Brenda has some notes.
I just want to remind everybody that we will not be meeting here tomorrow. Also, because you have to access the captain's table through the dining room, you probably won't be able to get back there after 5 o'clock or 5:30 tonight. So this is your last chance today until Saturday morning to go and place bids on the silent auction books, which I would encourage all of you to do because it's a really great fundraiser for ARSC. Thank you.